Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Blast Podcast, a show where we believe movies can be more than just movies. I'm your host, Steve Watts, not joined by my usual co-host, Sam Sulik, and instead joined by producer Jack for the third episode in an ongoing series in which we invite people onto this pod to talk about their top five Blast movies. Before we dive in, let's hear a word from our sponsor. As always, the Blast Podcast is presented by the Blast app, which is going to be available sooner than you may realize. Make sure you're following our Instagram page at @blast_movies_, our TikTok at @blast.movies, and our YouTube channel at @blast.movies to stay up to date on all of our latest content. There you'll find podcast clips, movie ticket reviews from Ty and myself, and up-to-date news on the progress of the app. Lastly, please make sure to check out our app's landing page at blastmovies.net, where you can learn more about what Blast is going to be. All right, Jack, what have you watched this week?
First, just want to preface, it's an honor to be here. Second, I know I'm coming off a so-so performance on my last pod appearance. I got a lot of flack from my Widows breakdown and the yap sesh that went on with that. So no Widows breakdown and no ums. I'm really going to try to cut out the So bear with me. But really excited for this one. What I've watched this week, I wanted to prep. I knew it was going to be me and Steve. Obviously, Steve watches 50 movies a week. I could not get to that number. But if anyone knows me, I don't watch any movies. So the fact that I watched four this week is a really big deal. We'll quickly get through the two ones from this weekend because they were not theater watches, but MI6 Fallout, I've seen this movie a million times. MI's one of the few series that I love and will go back to. And again, this is another series that I've been introduced to in like the last 2 years with my continually growing movie expertise. But I love Fallout.
So real quick, what's your top three Mission Impossibles?
Dude, Ty and I were just talking about this the other day. I will rotate any of 3 through 7. And just okay. Basically, it's recency bias. But let's say, as of now, Fallout, because I just watched it, 1. Dead Reckoning, 2.
Okay.
MI3, 3.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yep. Second one from this weekend, Everybody Wants Some. Richard Linklater. It's basically a bunch of college dudes hanging out. And that was what our weekend was this past weekend with some of our buddies as well. But just wanted to shout out our friend DL, because I think every other time we hang out, we throw on this movie and watch this. So it's a great watch. It's easy, especially with just a bunch of guys.
Linklater has a way of just kind of making like every conversation feels so natural, and it feels like you've lived through every situation he puts through any of his movies.
Totally. I mean, we were all just, it was a nostalgia bomb of wanting to go back to college, and big Glenn Powell guy. That was, I feel like you would know better than I would, but that was kind of his semi start ish. No,
I think, I don't know. I'm not a Glenn Powell fiend. I know, isn't Bill Simmons like a big Glenn Powell guy, actually?
I think after Maverick, yeah, he hopped on the bandwagon. Me too. But yeah, we'll have to fact check that. I'm usually the fact checker, so I'll check afterwards. with those two out of the way from this weekend, obviously, I just wanted to throw in here quick. I was also a part of Dune Week, Dune Day. I know you guys went into very specific detail, and I did want to make fun of you because both of you were like, this is a minus movie grade, and then dunked on the movie for 40 minutes.
I did realize that. I went upstairs afterwards. Morgan was waiting to go to bed, and I was like, I'm just sad right now. Like, I watched a great movie and I'm coming off of a pod talking about it for an hour and a half, and I feel just defeated and like hopeless. It was kind of a downer pod.
And I was cracking up because I know at the core of all of it, you both loved that movie, and you know, it's gonna be a big time theater experience, not just this year, but I think generationally. But yeah, I mean, when you guys were like, yeah, I really don't see any great acting performances in this. What are we doing here? cracking me up. Anyways, I don't need to go too far into Dune. I have a ton of notes, but just because I had a lot of downtime today. Dune 1, quick. I know we made the joke of it was the nap of the year. I wouldn't go that far. I really, especially after seeing 2, appreciated the world building. Anybody that I'm like recommending to, I'll say like, you need to get through Dune 1. And I know you love it a lot more than Ty does. And I think I'm leaning more on your side as well. But I mean, the pace is slow, but I think it looks awesome. I remember in theaters, I'm like, I've never seen anything like this. And you could see Timmy and the Paul arc, especially after 2, like that part 1 was a moment too. So I think I appreciate Dune 1 more than I did even a week ago.
Interesting. Yeah. Ty and I have, I think, differing opinions on just what certain franchise movies need to be. We get into it a lot about The Last Jedi, but he says it's a top 3 Star Wars movie because of the quality of it and the story, and there are elements of it that I think are great, but we both agree that it is like an impossible, like it completely shits on the movie that came before it, and it sets an impossible task for the movie coming afterwards. And so it's interesting that I think that he just is able to separate entries and franchises more and look at them individually. But it's kind of odd.
Did you have that same thinking when you went back and revisited the original Dune, which I know you love?
1984?
Yep.
Yeah. something about that movie that I didn't get to talk about on the last pod was that every character has like an inner voice that is like fully like heard throughout the entire movie. So you're hearing everyone's thoughts. It's incredibly confusing.
Like narration, constant narration?
Pretty much, but it constantly shifts perspectives. Like it'll be like Paul's inner voice talking about like, I need to convince them about this and this. And then it'll like look over at Zendaya's character and she'll be like, I don't know if I trust this guy. And none of it is verbal. It's all just in their heads. It's fucking awesome.
that's going to be the next pod, you know, fuck Dune 1 and 2. Let's go back to the OG, the original,
please.
that'll be another one for you and me. We can leave Ty out of that one too. couple quick Dune 1 notes though. Takeaways. I genuinely loved Oscar Isaac and the realistic like portrayal of a father in that movie. I think he was the most like normal character in this entire 1 and 2 duo here. And I wish, so him and Momoa, I have a note down. I get you have to kill off some characters and there needs to be different plot threads going here and there. I wish we saw more of them.
Yeah.
And it's not like 2 is lacking a loaded cast, because Jesus, everyone and their mother is in that movie. But I loved both of them. And Momoa was a total scene stealer for me too.
Yeah, I would have loved if Villeneuve would have just made the choice to swap Momoa and Brolin and just have Momoa in the second movie instead. I think that would have been a lot better.
I'm a Brolin guy too. So
fair. Also, Duncan Idaho, like best name ever.
Yes. Yeah. last point. This, when we saw it in the theaters, this was the beginning of the Rebecca Hall of Fame. This was right around the time I saw The Town, which is, spoiler alert, coming up a little later. But Rebecca Ferguson, it's just her and Rebecca Hall in the hall right now. I just wanted to, you know, give the origin story there.
Glad you could get that out there. If you're ready, I only put down two feature watches from this past week. And for reference, for anybody wondering out there, I didn't get to talk through my what I watched last week. And I actually had a 19 movie week. So, like, thank God for you guys that we had to just jump straight into Dune 2. There are two watches that have stuck out from the past 2 weeks, though. And that is Lights Out. And do you remember when this came out? You're 2 years older than me, I think. So you would have been a sophomore in high school.
It sounds familiar. I'm guessing it's a horror movie.
I think that me just describing it to you right now might give you nightmares.
You go ahead.
It's about this like monster ghost demon thing that only exists in the dark. And so, like, there are all these scenes that play with, like, motion-activated lights, and the lights go off, and then she's, like, right up in their face, or the scene-stealing, just the scene that stole the show was the boyfriend of one of the main characters is getting, like, held up for, like, a backbreaker by this demon, and then he clicks the lights on his car, and she just, like, drops him, and he runs away. Awesome movie. Absolutely a blast movie. I remember sleeping with the light on for like 2 weeks after I saw this in eighth grade. A+ blast grade. Other than that, Summer of 84, I just want to give a shout out because it's legitimately one of the most fun watches I've had in a long, long time. It's a lot like The Burbs with Tom Hanks, if that movie actually just fucking slapped. I loved it, start to finish. Highly recommend. It's on Shudder if anybody has that. But the last thing I want to talk through is last week I got to go out to the Music Box and see the Oscar-nominated animated shorts, which if you have been following this pod for any amount of time, I'm sure you've heard me talk about working on Facet's selection committee for this award, and they are an Oscar-qualifying committee. So It's very exciting to see when one of the movies that I saw back in the day makes it into the Oscars, and that did happen here. So I have a quick ranking of these five, and I think the slate is significantly worse than last year, sadly. So number five is Our Uniform. It's animated in a very interesting way, but it focuses on hijabs and the like very strict enforcement of wearing those in Iran and other countries. Very touching story at the heart of it, but at the selection committee I saw so many movies that focused on this topic that I think did it a little bit better, so semi-disappointed in this choice. Not as disappointed as number four, though, which is War is Over. This is made by Yoko Ono and John Lennon. And, like, you know the song that's like, "So this is Christmas."
Yes.
So let me set the scene for you here. There are two sides of a war, and it's like an alternate universe where World War One goes for like ever. And one soldier on each side of the war is playing chess with each other via carrier pigeon, flying like moves back and forth. And then they're like, "Oh, full on ground invasion." And the two guys that were playing chess against each other start to kill each other and realize who they are. And then needle drop to "So This Is Christmas." and the war like ends and everybody is very kumbaya. It's strange.
You know, if you went back to the 60s and asked fans of the Beatles, what are the odds that John Lennon produces and creates a Oscar nominated short film animated? I don't think I would put any money on those odds, and I have a sick gambling addiction, but that's out of left field.
Yeah, it is. Not as out of left field as number three, though. It's called 95 Senses. And this is an old man talking through the five senses and how we use them. And after about two of them, I think, he talks about his hearing. And it's a very, like, funny, lighthearted start to this. I shit you not. He starts talking about hearing. He's like, yeah, my dad used to blast music when I was a kid. And because of that, I accidentally, like, hit a car when I was working at an auto shop. I lost that job. I loved that job. So I got pissed and I went over there and I burned down the auto shop the next night. And then he's like, and unfortunately, because of my hearing, I couldn't hear the owner's family screaming on the top floor while they burned alive. And then you realize that this guy's on death row talking about, like, talking through his five senses as they, like, disappear at, well, he gets the lethal injection. It's horrifying.
Just to clarify, again, this is animated, too?
Yes, it's animated.
Sign me up.
Yeah, maybe not a vegan movie, definitely not a Thai movie. Number two was Pachyderm. I don't really have a ton to say about this movie other than that it is just beautiful. I encourage you all to watch it. Very, very subtle and horrifying as well in its own way. And number one is the movie that I had seen for Facets before. I ranked it as the best movie I had seen that summer, and it was Letter to a Pig, which is about a World War II veteran, a Holocaust survivor, who is running away from Nazi soldiers, hides in a barn, and is essentially saved by a pig walking in front of him and blocking the soldiers' views. Very interesting, very touching. It gets a little abstract towards the end, which I saw these movies with my sisters. They were not necessarily a fan of, but I'm a big fan of that kind of out there stuff, as you know.
No. Quick follow-up. Is Letter to a Pig, is that like the odds-on favorite to win this? Or is there, does no one have any idea who's going to take this
one? I don't know. My guess to win it is 95 Senses. It didn't really resonate with me that well, but I know a lot of people have said that it was very touching and it is very anti-death penalty, which obviously the Oscars, like the Academy, is a political organization as much as they are an artistic one. So usually that gives films like that the edge in my experience.
Gotcha. Yeah. For some reason that one didn't resonate with me, but maybe if I talk for me.
Can't imagine why. All right, you ready to talk through these top five blast movies? I've looked at your list here, and it's awesome. I will warn you, though, friend of the pod, Jake Kolb, invited me to play some basketball with him yesterday. And I told him that we were doing this pod tonight. And for reference, he has never met producer Jack. He, in 30 seconds, named three of these movies.
That's a blast fan right there. shout out Jake Pope. We have texted before. He's been somebody I've bounced ideas off of as well. I wish, in honor of him, I would have came up with a list of 55 honorable mentions. But I cut my list to just the five. But yeah, I'm super pumped. Super pumped.
Awesome. So let's kick this off. What's your number five?
All right. Yeah, we'll go 5-1. I will say 4-1, there was no issue, especially my top three. It's a rotating just depending on what I've seen recently, but the top four have been cemented for a long time. But this fifth, I could have gone a couple different ways. I wanted to throw in a DC movie, a strictly DCEU, for a spoiler, number four is the Batman, but different universe. Number five is Batman versus Superman. But as Steve always appreciates, the extended version, not the piece of garbage that was put out in theaters in 2016. Hell yeah. So to paint the picture of my Blast story, this was an at-home watch, I believe, just last year, last winter, random Saturday night, snowing. I remember it like it was yesterday. I had, I think, a couple nights before watched Man of Steel, and that was introduction into DCEU. I never watched the Snyder Cut before. I was late to the game, and I was always a fair weather Marvel fan, but really liked Man of Steel. I liked Snyder's, you know, dark and gritty portrayal of superhero movies, and that always attracts me. I also just love the real life stakes. Like I get the Marvel pull, you know, it's goofy, mm-hmm. it's sometimes funny, but I feel like I get annoyed with that after a while, and I like imagining a world, a real world, where Batman and Superman are fighting each other. Yeah, this was a great watch. Ty, like, had come back from a night out or something, and it was pretty shortly after I started the movie, so he was locked in. This is a just random anecdote from that night too, but after the movie, we got in the car. It was like a snowstorm, but we drove to Taco Bell at like 1 a.m. watching Chris Stuckman videos.
Awesome.
And getting a couple Doritos Locos Tacos. But I think the big Blast takeaway for this movie from me, before we just get into my actual thoughts about the movie, this was one a lot like Dune, and I would say part two almost cracked this five spot, was it was a movie I wanted to go back and just read as much as I could and understand the lore. I wanted to watch every single review, really understand the world that Snyder built. And I love movies like that. Dune 2, where I like just didn't have a clue about that story.
Right.
And just really get interested in it.
Dude, and this, I think that Batman versus Superman is a movie that suffered from very high expectations when it came out. Ty has obviously shown me, I'm sure, as much stuff as he's shown you about this movie and the production hell and everything behind it. I did want to cut back, though, to you talking about Marvel being a little lighthearted and more funny and stuff, because I've been looking for a reason to bring up this review on the pod for a few weeks now. I watched Seven Samurai a while ago. This is Akira Kurosawa's 3.5 hour long epic from 1954. And it is widely regarded as one of the greatest movies of all time. I don't necessarily share that belief, but scrolling through Letterboxd, there was a review that says, "My parents made me watch this and I hate it. Marvel is so much funnier, and this is just trying to copy Marvel. It's like Marvel in Ohio."
Marvel has its fingerprints, you know, even in 1954.
I don't think I've ever laughed harder at a review and also been more scared for our future.
Marvel or die. So, yeah, that's hilarious. Seven Samurais, quick. Would that be a vegan movie?
No. It is incredibly slow paced. Nothing happens for probably the first 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Well, the fact you say slow paced, great transition into my first note I have down here. I'll go verbatim. "I'm always into a slow burn type of movie. Realistic superhero." So, you know, if Seven Samurai is slow, you never know. The extended cut, though, I think you can speak a little better to this, because I was trying to piece together. I never even saw the theatrical release. And I don't know if you have this down with you right now, but can you talk about what they left on the cutting room floor in the theaters and why people were so pissed about that? Because I've never understood it. With this extended cut, I'm like, this is one of the best superhero movies I've ever seen. Like, I love this. So I didn't get it.
Yeah, it's, I remember seeing this in theaters, and that's the last time I saw that theatrical version, when opening night, I was sitting front row, so had the neck ache for the next like week and a half. But I remember it being just like all of the storylines, all of the side storylines besides just Bruce and Clark fighting were kind of just abandoned in the last like 30 minutes or so to just give the spotlight to the action. I can't off rip give you what storylines were kind of massacred by it, but it was a very different movie and a much worse movie.
I'm glad I've only seen the extended cut, because I don't even think if I saw the theatrical release, I'd want to explore the extended. Same with Snyder cut. I never saw Justice League, just Snyder cut after this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm a Batman guy. It goes back to the realism of that story and feeling like that could be in sort of our world without, you know, multiverse and aliens flying everywhere and whatnot. My first big pull from this movie that Ty pushes back on a lot, and you'll understand why when I say it, but I really think Ben Affleck's Batman, I won't come out and be like, oh, he's the best Batman of the three. But I always feel like when I hear reviews or whatever, he's a step below. And I really enjoyed his character. I liked his physicality. I liked kind of the bulkier suit. And I feel like he is the most everyday man type Batman of him, Bale, and Pattinson. I just want to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, I actually do really love this version of Batman. The reason I think that Affleck gets hated on so much is because in the other movies, there's the precedent that Batman doesn't kill, which obviously, like, Christian Bale is, like, nuking people. I don't know how that doesn't qualify here. But I think that him killing, or at least killing by proxy when he's, like, marking people to get shanked in prison, I think that really bugged people. But there was a video essay that Ty sent me like 3 years ago, so I'm not going to be able to shout out the creator of it, but it was beautiful, and it explained that this is exactly what a Batman would probably look like when he's older, when he's, because Bruce in this is like, what, 50s probably?
Yeah.
And if he's been fighting crime since he was 20 something, like that's 30 years and the city's not improving and he's frustrated and now he maybe is taking matters into his own hands. I think that this is an aged and kind of bitter Batman that we're watching become a better person once again.
It's funny you bring up the aged Batman, because I look at him and Jeremy Irons' Alfred as like Popovich and Duncan, old, but you know, still got it. But yeah, I like that too. Even if, you know, Bale and Pattinson aren't teenagers, but Affleck's definitely got some years on both of them. Even Bale, I mean, that was almost 15, 20 years ago. But yeah, no, love Baffleck. The chemistry with Godot and Cavill, I really loved. And I'm a sucker for courtroom movies, and I really enjoyed, I'll say it again, but kind of the slow build up and the, the story building of that too. Holly Hunter as the senator was great. She's great in Succession, which is one of my favorite shows. And one of my all time favorite movie twists, we can get into spoilers, who cares, but the bomb in the courtroom was just an all-timer. And then I think that set the tone for the last hour of the movie. I'm really giving a lot of flowers to a lot of actors and their portrayals in this movie. Am I crazy to think that Amy Adams was corny as hell as Lois Lane in this? I did not see it at all. I thought her dialogue was cheesy. I didn't even have a problem with her being cast, but just the way she like came across, even in Man of Steel, I was like, I'm not digging this.
I think she's a little bit better in Man of Steel and definitely a lot better in ZSJL. But yeah. This one, she is like particularly written, I think, bad. I don't know if it's her performance or what, but no, I agree. She is kind of a nuisance on screen at times.
Like, did she lose a bet? I didn't get it because she's a world-renowned actress. You know, this wasn't right. Like, you know, we could debate Austin Butler and Dune, him being newer, but, you know, Amy Adams is Amy Adams. So I didn't see it. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
What did you think of Eisenberg as Lex Luthor? That's another very divisive kind of topic of this.
Yeah, so I think I'm on like the weirder side of that one too. I really enjoyed him. And maybe it's because I don't particularly care, probably isn't the best word, but you know, I never read the comics. You bringing up Batman Not Killing kind of just even went over my head. I know that because I've seen so many Batman movies, but I'm never like internally thinking that.
Yeah,
I thought he was super weird and quirky, and I really liked it.
I actually really enjoy him in this too. I think that like a villain like Lex Luthor doesn't really work being who he was in the Christopher Reeve adaptations of Superman anymore. Yeah. I think he needs to be, instead of just like kind of weird and funny, he needs to be like weird and like, ugh, you know?
Yeah. If you're going to be weird, Eisenberg went all in with that. He was super fucking weird. So I liked it. It was a good switch up from the movie's already, you know, super dark itself. So I was a big fan. This is kind of a bigger picture question for you. But after seeing this movie and then obviously Snyder Cut just really solidified my DC over Marvel alliance and being on Snyder's side, I don't understand why James Gunn is in position now and Snyder lost the reins. Can you break that down for me?
You know, I was actually looking at this recently. I think first off, the big reason is James Gunn did Suicide Squad for DC, or The Suicide Squad, which was a very big success. I know a lot of people say that's the best DC movie to come out in the last like 5-10 years. The other thing is, though, that he is very skilled with Marvel, and I think they're hoping to draw the Marvel audience over instead of it being a DC versus Marvel. I think they're trying to make it a DC and Marvel with Gunn, and they snatched him. I don't know if you know this. They hired him immediately after Marvel fired him due to some concerning tweets from his past. Have you seen those?
No, but yeah, concerning tweets, that's a big no-no these days, so I get it.
They're pretty weird. Like, I think I it reads as someone just trying to be funny, and they're kind of failing too. But regardless of that, I think that everybody in the Snyderverse kind of got the short end of the stick. I mean, if you look at the Aquaman movies, you have the Amber Heard controversy. If you look at the Flash, Ezra Miller has obviously gone off the deep end. Ben Affleck, I think after Batman versus Superman, kind of had a drinking relapse. I don't quote me on that, but I believe that's what happened. Cavill, I guess, just kind of got screwed. Ray Fisher as Cyborg got completely blacklisted and screwed over by Hollywood. Like, they're all just, I mean, this kind of killed everyone's career that was involved.
Yeah, it was worst case scenario for for everyone. And I would love to see an alternate universe where the Snyderverse lives on for another 10-15 years. I love the trilogy, and I love the extended cuts of both in the movies that Snyder was intending to make. So it's a real shame because I thought they were levels above majority of Marvel movies, if not all of them.
I couldn't agree more. One big hater of Zack Snyder and these movies is our boy, Sean Fennessy. We're both big Fennessy fans for those listening. He like hates Zack Snyder and all the Snyder movies.
Yeah, I don't get it because I would say 95% of my movie takes either come from you or Ty or Sean Fennessy. So this is the one where we butt heads, but it makes no sense.
Very, very strange.
It's disappointing. It's disappointing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Man of Steel, I remember I revisited that last summer, and his Letterboxd review of it was like the when Superman says, like, you're not going to hurt my mommy or something, that's a real low point. And I'm like, dude, Marvel has moments that are cornier than that every day of the week. Come on.
They've got 10 in every movie. Yeah. Bummer.
Okay, so quick question for you here. Have you seen Ben Affleck in The Accountant?
No, but I like, based on the trailers and seeing a couple clips, I can tell where you're going with this.
That's enough, yeah. Is Bruce Wayne The Accountant?
Is The Accountant part of the DCEU?
Yeah.
You know what? I can't fully speak to it because I've never seen The Accountant, but I will say I would guess that The Accountant has a similar scene and line that Ben Affleck reads when he's in the basement of that party after talking to Cavill, talking to Cavill, the journalist.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. He goes, Alfred, get me out of here. You know, I feel like there's a lot of The Accountant in that. Nice shoes.
Yeah. I think he might be the same character. The Accountant is on the spectrum for reference too. And they act fairly similar, which makes me think maybe Bruce Wayne is also on the spectrum in the Batman, in the Snyderverse at least.
You never know with Snyder. This is a good... That isn't a good transition, but the superhero, superhero movie, great transition into my number four. I mentioned it before, but it is Matt Reeves, the Batman, Robert Pattinson's the Batman. My quick blast synopsis here. I'm going to roll through this one because we're 36 minutes in and people don't need to hear me yapping Steve and I could do this for 2.5 hours. I wouldn't even realize that went by. Obviously everyone knows Ty's obsession with this movie, quote unquote, life-changing experience. I was also a part of this era. I was at the theater with him for every single one of those, theater viewing experiences. I loved it. Again, big Batman guy, but this one just felt so different. Maybe it has to do with the fact I appreciate The Dark Knight. I love that trilogy, but I don't, you know, ride or die for it. I'm open to any adaptation, obviously, with my love for Baffleck as well.
Yeah.
But just the way, this was one of the first movies I saw on the big screen where even me not being a movie nerd, really appreciated the way it was shot, and I noticed it and like the dark scale, the constant rain, just the little cuts here and there. I really thought that was cool, even as someone that doesn't think about movies usually that way.
Interesting. Character wise, I'm kind of surprised this is on your list after you said that you aren't really a big fan of the comics or anything, because this is kind of a return to the traditionalist Batman being the world's greatest detective, which is how the comics really started. This is more of a mystery movie than an action movie for all but the last like 30 minutes, really. Yeah. So I'm wondering, like, walk me through your thoughts on it being a little bit more of a slow burn and more of a mystery than a thriller.
Yeah, well, there you go. The buzzword again, slow burn. loved that about this movie. I also just really I liked that it wasn't a predictable Batman story and that you figured out pretty early on that it was going to be this serial killer-esque, you know, Riddler mystery. And I just, it felt like a movie just completely on its own. I know it's got the Batman IP behind it, but Reeves made it seem like just this entirely different world. And Pattinson, I think he's already, you know, been a quote unquote star for years from Twilight, but just an actual great actor, movie star performance that I thought was a total moment for him.
Yeah, I mean, this solidifies his comeback to being that guy, really. He has been through a long journey, and I did want to ask you, have you seen Good Time with him?
I haven't.
Oh my god, this is like the definition of a vegan movie.
Seriously.
Like, you should watch it, like, when we stop watching this. So it's him and I believe it's Benny Safdie, who is one of the creators of Uncut Gems.
Yep.
And Benny Safdie plays Robert Pattinson's brother who has special needs. They rob a bank together, and basically the entire movie is Pattinson in one night trying to, like, figure his shit out and get away from the cops with his brother.
Bank robbery, right up my alley. I will definitely put this on the vegan list. I might get to it 3 years from now, but noted. It's up here.
I'm telling you, man, you'd have a good time. There's a really funny clip of Pete Davidson going on, I want to say it was Jimmy Kimmel, and he was there to promote The King of Staten Island, and instead he just promoted Good Time the entire time.
I think I've seen this clip, but did not know that was the movie at the time. That's hilarious. Going back to just finishing up this Blast theater experience, this was the first movie I saw multiple times in the theater. I had never been one to go back and want to revisit. I think we saw it like 2 days after we went opening night, and just it got even better. I was so pumped, and I've only ever done that with The Batman and then Dune Part Two. So special theater experience for sure. Going into the actual movie, again, I talked about, you know, the dark, the grittiness of it all. It was funny, this being on my list, because like 5 minutes in, I mean, the opening scene is pretty menacing, and just right off the bat, I'm like, oh, this is going to be dark. I'm like, do I need to walk out of the theater? This is not the kind of movie that's up my alley. So I'm glad I stuck it out. You know, it wasn't too crazy. I was able to get through it. But yeah, the whodunit, the clues, the Riddler, it all pulled me in. Again, I loved Pattinson's performance. I think he's the best Batman. Not the best, like, Bruce Wayne in him. I think Bale's the best Bruce Wayne. But I think Pattinson is by far the best just Batman in the suit. Thoughts?
No way. No. I have two takes here. First off, the best Batman movie and the best Batman is Kevin Conroy, specifically in Batman Mask of the Phantasm. Beautiful movie, shows Batman in a light that you've never seen before. However, the best live action Batman for me is by far Batflick.
Oh my god, no shot. I thought you were gonna give me the vanilla Christian Bale answer.
No, I in suit Batman, if we're talking about that, I think that Affleck is fucking awesome. Like, that there's that scene in BVS where he's like taking on the group of thugs in the warehouse, and he punches a dude so hard in the head that his legs fly up in the air behind him. That's awesome. Come on.
And that's why he's the best Batman. No, I can't knock you there. Again, I didn't want you to say Bale and give me the movie reviewer answer. So that's great. Is Dark Knight your favorite live action Batman movie?
I think my favorite live action is 2022, the Batman.
Beautiful. You don't even need to go into that. couple just movie nerd notes I got written down. There are so many little scenes and shots that I just feel like I've never seen before in a superhero movie. I love, obviously, the I'm Vengeance and the way that's shot and his just beat down of all the thugs. I love the music when he walks into the Iceberg Lounge and you get introduced to Penguin, but that whole sequence of him taking down the guards and then he's on the stairs and Penguin's like, whoa, whoa. And you see Colin Farrell getting to work. And I think my favorite has to be the gunfight in the tunnel with the lights going in and out. I mean, I almost had a seizure, but I thought that was pretty sweet.
No, that is by far like the scene that sticks with me the most. Also, funny enough, used in Lights Out, they like shoot the gun and like the demon keeps like appearing and disappearing with the gunshots. Awesome.
Maybe I'll have to watch Lights Out after this pod.
Please.
Yeah, I mean, the movie, the cast is underrated, but I would say underratedly loaded. Love Colin Farrell. Totoro, he makes another appearance on my top five. Jeffrey Wright, Serkis, just all those guys I pointed to, and I'm like, I like seeing you on the big screen. So my last... We don't need to get more into the movie. I've been talking for 10 minutes. But my last point I wanted to make from this movie with the Riddler, the message board, I feel like my friends and I talked about this for at least a month afterwards. I don't even know if you know what I'm referencing, but when they show he's on a stream and all of the comments, I wrote a couple down. This is going to be a blast in all caps. So, hey, low blast promotion there. Got my AK ready. Where are we meeting up? ! I thought that was – this movie is in no way a comedy, but that was the funniest shit and, like, the longest standing just jokes out of that movie that we had going for a long time.
That's hilarious. But before we move on, I have one more question for you. I know Ty's take on this, but what do you think of Bruce and Selina not ending up together at the end of this movie?
Oh, brother. We could do a complete side pod about this. That's the relationship I cared about most in this movie. And just we don't need to get too crazy, but just the sexual tension between them is unbelievable, and the fact that just nothing happens, what are we doing? And then she just rides off. She definitely, like, she's not coming back in Batman 2, at least I don't think so. Maybe, but just bullshit.
Wow.
how do they not end up together? They're building on it.
They probably should. They probably should. There is a... I'm trying to remember the Batman animated movie that I saw recently where Bruce and Selina are like a full-on couple that live together. It's hilarious. It's just the most watchable thing ever.
As much as I, try to appreciate animation for you and Ty, you still can't talk me into that over Zoe Kravitz as Selina. So, I get it, but...
Yeah.
There's no comparison.
Fair.
Moving on. Number three. Honestly, this is one we can speed through. It's Rounders. It's my introduction to my other hero other than Ben Affleck, Matt Damon. This is the easily the most rewatchable movie for me, and this is a complete rip-off of The Ringer and Bill Simmons, but easily, I could pop into any section of this movie, sit down, I'm in. I couldn't even tell you the first time I actually watched this, but I will tell you, this is the movie that I've watched the most front to back out of any.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Not only that, it obviously launched a poker kick with Ty and I as well, where I didn't even know how to play cards before this movie. And that summer, we played 3-4 times a week with a bunch of guys. And then Ty and I would play like 1v1 just because we were just fiending to play any sort of poker. It took over card playing for me, and was just a huge, huge interest. But yeah.
You know, I've never really been a huge Rounders guy, but it is a fun movie. I was most shocked to see this on your list, and judging, I mean, Ben Affleck appears on this list how many times? And Matt Damon is appearing as well. I'm shocked that Good Will Hunting does not make this list for you.
Dude, that's funny. That's one where I obviously appreciate and respect the greatness of that movie, but give me Rounders over that, and give me any Bourne movie besides the newest one over Good Will Hunting. Just my personal preference. Yeah. Yep.
You didn't like Jason Bourne?
No, did you? Is that a joke?
I loved it. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Oh, man. Yeah,
bad take maybe, but I get just as much enjoyment out of the fifth as the first.
No two, shot. Probably. Oh, me and my stepdad 2 Christmases ago watched every single Bourne movie, and both of us after Jason Bourne were like, that was a waste of 2.5 hours.
What damn. About Bourne Legacy? You a fan of Renner in that?
Did not watch Renner out of respect for Matt Damon. So
fair.
But quick couple side notes from this. I love that this movie, usually I'm very ageist with movies. I will only watch movies past 2010 most of the time. So this is a nice one-off for me. I love that there's no phones, there's no social media shoe-in. It's just like a hangout movie. It's kind of like everybody wants some without the Russian mob. just a bunch of guys playing cards. And I really love that too. Damon and Norton's chemistry, Malkovich and whatever accent he's doing. Just a rewatchable movie at its core.
Awesome. I love the take.
Quick question for you. We don't need to get in specifics of the movie, but this is the one I wanted you to prep for. You know how Ed Norton's character Worm, they have that scene in the abandoned school gym. Yeah. I think this is a unanswerable question, but was Worm living in there the entire movie? We never really found out like where he was staying, because he wasn't sleeping on Mike McDee's couch. So I don't know.
He's absolutely sleeping in the gym, dude.
He's got to be, right? He got nowhere to go.
And you know what? I'll take it a step further. School wasn't abandoned before he started sleeping in that gym.
Worm cleared it out. He said, "Hey, kids, let's play cards for the school. I'll take the gym if I win." Okay. All right, we're moving on to my top two. These both could probably use our podcasts. Steve, before we were talking, or before we hopped on the pod, was shocked that this came in at number two. But The Town is not my number one. The Town is number two. I could say this could flip-flop with one any other day. But I had watched one more recently, so had to put The Town at the two. Quick blast story. Obviously did not see this in theaters. This was a more recent watch. Our good friend of the pod, Max, was in town. Him and Ty just randomly had this on when it was on Netflix. I got sucked in right after Doug and Claire are having lunch and Jem pops by.
Mm.
And watched the rest of it. And I was like, God, this movie fucking rocks. Less than 24 hours later, another friend of the pod, Ryan, comes up and he's like, hey, let's watch a movie tonight. I'm like, oh, I got the perfect one, The Town. So watched it in full, caught the first, 20 minutes that I missed. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it for the third time on that Sunday of that weekend. So basically 2 3/4 watches of The Town in a 72-hour span. So if that doesn't show my love for this movie, I don't know what does.
Yeah, man, that's a me move. That's something that I do far too frequently. I remember I had a couple of people checking in on me last year. I watched A Ghost Story 3 times in a night, and they were like, dude, are you?
That's a different level. And maybe I'll try to break that. This is the movie to do it with. But
yeah.
What, back to back to back you watched it?
Yeah. Just restarted it as soon as the credits rolled. I'll tell you what, there's a Letterboxd list of people who have done the Letterboxd 365 challenge, where you watch the same movie every day for a year. There are like 18 entries on the list. I dare you to do that with The Town.
365, The Town. Well, did you had to have seen Joe Mazz, the Celtics coach, said last year when he took over the job that he would watch The Town every day to just be fully immersed as a Boston Celtic.
Did he really?
Yep. So yeah, me and Joe Mazz. We're like, I'm more curious. What do you think of The Town? Because it's obviously the running gag with me, but I know how Ty feels about it. Give me some thoughts.
So it's interesting because usually I hate heist movies. Big out on Den of Thieves.
Hate Thieves almost made my list. No joke.
Hate all the Ocean's movies. Can't get through them. The Italian Job, all those. Like I just generally no interest in a heist movie. But this one is actually kind of like an exception to the rule. Part of that is because like when anybody talks in a Boston accent, it just commands my attention fully and I wish that I had a Boston accent because it's fucking sick. But in general, I think what this movie does very well is its pacing. It's not all just one heist. It's many heists. All of the characters, two to three of the characters are pretty well rounded out. I'm thinking like Rebecca Hall is awesome in this. Renner, I usually really dislike Jeremy Renner. I loved him in this. Love Ben Affleck in anything. And I mean, robbing Fenway Park is one of the most creative heists I've ever seen in a movie.
It's like just the perfect Jack Beagan. If you're going to intertwine movies and sports for me, because obviously sports is my first love, the Fenway heist, the first time I saw it, First of all, I couldn't believe that they even thought of that plot line, but also how realistic they made it look and how it was executed and the genius of all of the little moving pieces, getting Affleck and Renner to that room in the basement, which, side note, I want to know, I'm guessing that's an actual room, but that couldn't be the spot where they actually throw all the cash, because then some idiot like me would try to break into Fenway and try to find it.
I mean, my question is just how often is this cash room cleared out? is this just today's like ticket sales? And if that's the case, then why is everybody making a big deal of it, man? The Red Sox will recover.
Seriously. So, yeah, if this is just, June 28th against the Rays, I think they'll be all right, But if it's exactly. If it's a month's worth, I get the hold up there. But yeah, dude, I just love everything about this movie. You mentioned Rebecca Hall. She's the inaugural Rebecca Hall of Fame member. Just immediately fell in love with her the second the opening credits rolled. Speaking of the opening credits, opening scene, I think, is the best opening scene in a movie ever. I know I've seen 10 movies total. But you get all the little, you know, the start of Doug and Claire's relationship, even when he's robbing the bank, you know, he grabs her hand and she's shaking, trying to open the vault. And you get the little sense of, you know, there's something there. I don't know if it's going to turn into a romantic relationship like it does throughout the movie, but they do a great job of that right away. And then the cut to Claire walking down blindfolded to the edge of the rocks. She touches the water and just the town pops up and I'm in.
So the town, I was also, I didn't remember this because I thought the town was only a reference to Charlestown, but they have like a dramatic title drop reveal when they say like the town, the local paper.
Right.
I feel like I could have done without that.
Oh, come on. Well, I'm guessing you would say too, you could have done without the 18 shots overlooking shots of Boston, that just pop in and out of this movie.
I don't mind it.
No. Okay. Okay. I've heard otherwise from, you know, Ringer folks, but right. I love it too. Why not? Just it's Boston, baby.
If it's a 2.5 hour long movie, why not just cut in those shots? You know, like you're in there for the long haul anyway.
If you're going to transition. Yeah. Why not? My one little blast story after the fact of already loving this movie. This past Christmas break, my parents are living in Boston these days, and my stepdad and I walked over to Little Italy to grab some breakfast one Sunday morning. And I'm walking down the street, and I'm like, holy shit. This is where the second robbery went down, where they drive the van. They got the nun masks.
Yeah.
Literally walked down that street. I was standing outside the door of that bank that they robbed. And I thought to myself,
dude, that's awesome.
Should I rob this bank in honor of Ben Affleck today? I didn't, thankfully, but thought about it.
For legal reasons. That's your
last. No, I for the sake of this company. I didn't
do it. Yeah.
But shout out Ben Affleck for the thought. My last little tidbits from this. I love the little intricacies of Dougie drinking kitty cocktails because he's sober. Doug following Claire into the laundromat and them having the back and forth. And he's like, oh, I like to have a good cry at the nail salon as she's crying about the bank that he just robbed. And then the classic, the cover up of Jem's tattoo at lunch. Just an all-time.
Yeah.
All-time. But so many little things that Affleck shot and wrote that I loved.
It's awesome. I do have a question about your thoughts on the alternate ending of this movie. Have you heard of this?
I have. I've, like a lot of movies, just read the Wikipedia page. I can't believe I haven't, first of all, bought the Blu-ray and just watched the extended version, but I don't know what my perfect ending would be. I didn't love the orange ending for the theatrical release, but I also don't think I'd want to see Doug getting killed. So I don't know. Maybe it ends with just a game at the ballpark. Sure, they've lost a couple hundred grand, but the Red Sox keep rolling. So
yeah, they're about to go on a crazy run. I kind of agree with you. I think Doug getting killed in the end, and for reference for those who don't know about this, the alternate ending of this movie is that Doug runs into, I'm pretty sure it's the guy that that he and Jem beat up earlier in the movie, and he kills Doug, and that's how it ends. I think it could be like cool to say like, he can't escape his past, blah, 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 blah. But I don't know if I really like that either. I think that this movie just doesn't, I don't know if a good ending does exist for this movie. I think it's kind of just like okay. Yeah.
Agreed. And I forgot reading about, you're saying the guy's like from where they break into that apartment and beat the shit out of them, he kills Doug. Oh, that's terrible. Mm-hmm. I hate that even more. yeah. But I don't know what the perfect ending would be. So who knows? My one big quick picture question to you before we move on to number one. It's simple. The Town or The Departed? And I do have a take on this because I have seen The Departed. So go ahead.
The Departed. Every day of the week.
It's so slow.
I love the ending of The Departed. And I just love Nicholson doing his best. I think he's awesome in that movie, just floating in and out of a Boston accent. Like, are you a cop scene was quoted in my house, like, growing up for years. So when I finally saw this movie, I was like, oh, I get it. but no, I love everything about The Departed. It's a near perfect movie for me.
Oh, so The Town isn't even on your radar for that.
It's okay. The Departed. Great movie grade. I'm giving probably an A, and The Town I'm probably giving a B+.
I'll take it. You're gonna give me like some C bullshit, then
no.
I would have hopped off the pod, but that's okay.
No, I The Town is a great movie. I had a great time watching it or rewatching it recently. Jack joined the studio while I was in like the last 5 minutes of it. And it's aged better than I remember watching it the first time as well.
Again, all I can ask for is just positive vibes coming from both sides with The Town. I'll close it out just shouting out Rebecca Hall again. I didn't give her enough pod time. We'll get that to that in a later episode. But my number one blast movie of all time, Creed. People know my affinity for Michael B. Jordan. This is where it all stems from. To paint the picture, I am a Bill Simmons fan, a Bill Simmons head, a Ringer head. This is where Steve and I really hit it off when we first met. To a T, he had MBJ on the pod twice building up Creed back when, you know, MBJ's coming off Fruitvale Station. He's a name for sure. He's in Fantastic Four, which, well, obviously, yeah, I shouldn't have even said that. But he's a name, but obviously not anywhere near the celebrity he's at now. But I was buying stock in him even before this movie comes out. The movie drops. I didn't even go to opening night, but my brother and I went probably that opening weekend. Bridgeport, Connecticut, a little rougher area in town. The theater, not the best, but we get in there. Literally, I kid you not, like after that opening scene with Felicia Rashad and young Donnie, and then it's the cut to black and it's the Creed, and the opening, they just nail it in every which way. I mean, the movie doesn't work if that opening's not just electric. From that point on, this theater experience turned into like a mixture of like a concert and like a sporting event. People were standing up, like giving like some, oh yeah, like they're like, oh damn, when Donnie, you know, gets knocked out by Andre Ward. You've got all the, like, he's in Tijuana, people are already like standing up and rooting for him. It was the most insane movie theater experience I've ever been to. And to top it off, obviously the Meek Mill, Lord knows, Donnie running down the street of Philly. It's iconic. I felt so surreal being a part of that moment. The entire crowd stood up and everyone, when that needle dropped, it just could not... Just the Philly synergy and having Meek be the soundtrack to that scene, I'll never forget it. It was like being at a basketball game with a crowd.
So this is your number one blast movie. My question to you is this the greatest movie of all time if Dreams and Nightmares plays during a training montage?
I've thought about that before. I think I like that they took a mid-tier Meek song and didn't use the layup of Dreams and Nightmares, and sure. also incorporated Fighting Stronger, mm-hmm. and who composed it again? I'm blanking.
Was it Goranson?
Goranson, thank you. Yep. And having that kind of be a mashup, but in the best way possible. No, I'll ride for Lord knows. As much as I love Dreams and Nightmares, but
and then a quick follow up: is this even in your top five Blast movies if it's Liddy instead of Lord knows?
I don't want to speak on any Tory Lanez issues legally for this podcast, but let's just say Tory Lanez made my top five Spotify Wrapped for many years. So, I'm pleading the fifth, but yeah, I do love Liddy too. A couple more little Blast anecdotes. Obviously, I mentioned MBJ Truther. I had never seen a Rocky movie before this, going into this, and I still haven't seen one since. I wanted to box after this movie. My brother and I, kid you not, went home. We ordered a huge bag for the basement. We both got gloves, and for at least a month, I was like looking up MBJ's workouts in Men's Health, and I was like, I'm gonna do this shit. Like, I'm hanging up the basketball sneaks. I'm going to box. That didn't last at all. But just the power that this movie had over me was twofold.
Yeah, there's an alternate universe out there where producer Jack stuck to the – it wasn't he like six meals a day? Like you worked out for like 8 hours a day?
and, you know, I'm like 16, so I'm not cooking anything special. I'm like, oh, damn, I have to eat like four chicken breasts. I don't even know how to like make that. but now imagine like I could be fighting in Tijuana right now.
Yeah. Managing finances on the side.
still cutting up clips for you guys,
That's awesome. I wish that my theater experience would have been that special for Creed. Is this your favorite of the Creed movies then? Or
yeah,
is it just the best theater experience?
Oh, both. This is also just my favorite movie of all time. and again, The Town is, it's 1A, 1B. Yes, best theater experience, best movie. I was going to ask you this, but I'm already going to say it. Best Rocky movie.
Wow. What a statement. I'd make my argument for Rocky 2, I think, being objectively the best Rocky movie. But also, we're talking about Creed. Rest in peace, Carl Weathers. God, love that guy. Love all his work. And I've heard only amazing things of him off screen. But to end off this pod effectively, I want to ask you, what's the Jack Beagan equivalent of being called Baby Creed?
I wasn't prepped for this one. This is off the cuff. You know what? I will say, those close to me, I don't know if you've heard this, but they call me JJ. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stand for anything. It just kind of came out of nowhere. Like, my middle name's Patrick, you know, there's no J. but just for some reason, JJ sounds like I'm like a 6-year-old kid. So yeah, there's nothing tops. I'm showing you love, Baby Creed. yeah, JJ would be mine. All right, cool.
Okay. Got it. Thank you so much for joining me on this week's pod. This was, in my opinion, the best top five Blast movies list we've gotten so far. So shout out to you for getting me to rewatch The Town and think about all these awesome movies. Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Blast Podcast. Be sure to check out our website for all the latest content and news at blastmovies.net, as well as our Instagram at blast_movies_ and our TikTok at blast.movies for podcast clips and more content. We will catch you next week.
Like and subscribe.